Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, this is Genuinely Grace. Welcome to the podcast. I hope you've had a good week. Unbelievably hot weather. I know you shouldn't complain, really, but I'm not very good in like really extreme heat because I just can't get anything done. I mean, it's great if you're by the sea, but the rest of the time I find it just totally exhausting. Can't sleep, you know. Anyways, I'm sure you don't need to hear me whinging about weather. I really hope that things are okay for you and whatever is going to change for you, if anything, when the UK opens up a bit on the 4th with the various changes. Be interested to hear how it will affect you and your work and the stuff that you do. And as I've said several times before on the podcast, if you're concerned about coming out of lockdown, then reach out, get the support you need. You've still got a week or whatever to just really do that prep so that you feel really strong in your sobriety. If you've managed to ditch the booze over lockdown, I've got several Sober Club members that have managed to do that, and a huge big up to them. And now they feel a bit nervous about going out into that big wide world, but you'll be fine. You really will. But do reach out for help, if you need it. And then, of course, on the other side of the coin, there are a lot of people who have been drinking more, a lot more. It was great to interview Denise Welch with my Radio 2 hat on. We interviewed Denise Welch for the new book that she has out. It's such a good book. I really recommend it. I'm going to put the link in the show notes. It's called The Unwelcome Visitor: Depression and How I Survive It. And of course, if you're in the UK, you'll know Denise really well. She's she's been on our TV screens forever and a day, hasn't she, really? 30 years or so in so many of our hit telly shows. Corrie, of course, she's probably best known for. And she has spoken before about depression because she spoke very publicly about her postnatal depression. Then she effectively got clinical depression, and she talks about how it just comes upon her. That's why, the title of the book is The Unwelcome Visitor. And this all kicked off, this whole book kicked off because she shared a video post on social media when she was literally in the throes of feeling just really, really bad. And that was a very brave thing to do. And of course, I don't think she realised the response she would get. But in fact, it was incredible. She got just such an absolute avalanche of people responding and just saying thank you for sharing this, because it's a very common experience, of course. And for her to really document it, literally warts and all, I just thought that was, it's so brave and so important to bring this stuff out into the open, but of course, my particular interest is that she has very much openly and publicly talked about the link between mental health, depression and alcohol. And that's the missing piece that not very many people do talk about. And we've said many times on the podcast, without any shadow of a doubt, there is a link. And it was great interviewing Denise. She said exactly that. It's hard to know which came first, the chicken or the egg, as it were. She knew that she was drinking to literally numb the pain. Now I think she's 8 years sober, is it? And she says, she just feels so completely differently and now is able to deal in a different way. She also spoke about her concerns about lockdown. Sorry, that's where I was going with that. She said she thinks there's going to be literally a tsunami of problems when lockdown ends. And that's something that, really needs to be addressed. So check out the book. It's a really good read. And I just think anything that brings more awareness of how people feel and obviously the association with alcohol. I think it's great to bring this out into the open. And I'm still hoping that I'll be able to get Denise on the podcast as well. I keep asking, but, you know, obviously I'm going through kind of publishers and stuff. If we'd been back at work, this would have been so easy. Could I, you know, obviously I'd have met her. I'd have been able to give her a big hug if we'd actually been at the BBC. But of course, we're doing this from home, so it's not quite as easy. Otherwise, I'm sure I would have managed to persuade her to be a guest on the podcast. You never know. I hope that will happen. Just a little heads up that I am going to be doing, now that things are easing a little bit, my one day retreat that is coming up is going to be happening. So if you're booked onto that, our Relax and Manifest day on Saturday, July the 11th, that is going to be happening. So get in touch if you're booked onto that, and make sure that you you know, still want to come along. Otherwise, we will organise an online version. We'll see how people feel. I really want to make it what people want. So if you're booked onto that, then do get in touch. That would be fantastic to, more than fantastic, beyond fantastic to see people, even if we have to wave across the room. It would just be amazing, actually. I'm really looking forward to it, to actually to seeing people again. And in the Sober Club, we've been doing Zoom sessions. And while it's fabulous to connect with people online, there just is something about being in someone else's orbit, you know, just in the energy. So, yeah, it's going to be very special when we do get to have some more meetups again. And what else did I want to share with you? Yes, something else I've forgotten, but I've forgotten what. Never mind. Anyways, let me tell you about today's guest, because most of you, certainly in the UK, will know Spencer Matthews. You'll know him from various telly things as an actor, from Made in Chelsea, of course. That was really what made him super famous. And obviously the E4 show with his wife, the model Vogue. Since then, he's been something of an entrepreneur, invested in a number of startups. And then he's spoken very publicly about that became sober a couple of years ago and founded and became the CEO of the Clean Liquor Company last summer. Now, I did go to the launch of the Clean Liquor Company, of the Clean Gin, and I'm sure I told you guys about it on the podcast. It was an amazing launch, actually, amazing experience. And Pippa Middleton was there, and it was all just very glamorous and fabulous affair. And at the time, I hadn't realised that the clean liquor, that the clean gin, which was the first product, was 1.2 ABV. And so when I realised at first, I was a little bit kind of, oh, well, you know, why would I want to sort of think about and promote something that's 1.2 ABV? But I've since kind of learnt a lot more about it and genned up on it. And that's why, you know, at first I thought, oh, shall I interview Spencer? And then I'm really, really glad I did, because he explains the whole concept really, really well. And I think, you know, he's got such a fantastic point. And he described that the reason he named the brand Clean, the Clean Gin, was because he was thinking that there's so much negative connotation around no and low alcohol, or there can be. And so for him, he felt it was better to make it as though, you know, this is a choice that's part of a cleaner lifestyle. So I completely see where he's coming from on that. Not to mention the fact that, as he says in the podcast, by the time you've added your soda water or your tonic, which you would always do, it takes the product down to 0.3 ABV, which of course is less than a banana. So he won me over completely. And also, of course, you know, let's not forget that this podcast is for the sober and the sober curious. And I have a son who is a bit of a cocktail mixologist, or he wants to become one, definitely. And he drinks alcohol. He's at uni, he drinks alcohol, so do most of his friends. And it's not in his remit right now. It's not on his radar. It doesn't matter how much his mum, you know, were to nag him. It's not on his radar right this moment to decide to quit all alcohol. That's not going to happen for him. However, introducing him to something like the clean gin and the clean rum has been just absolutely remarkable, because he will now mix a cocktail using this can kind of drive or whatever. So I think there's really a place for this. And it'll all get explained beautifully. I must just preempt this again. We had to record over Zoom, obviously, and Spencer does allude to it, but there might be a little bit of noise going in the background because I think he's having a bit of building work done. So enjoy the interview.
Oh, it's so lovely to chat to you, Spencer. I don't suppose you remember, but you came into Steve Wright in the afternoon on Radio 2 with the other Made in Chelsea guys. Do you remember those days?
Honestly, it feels like a separate life. I think I was 19 when I started Made in Chelsea, so it's a lifetime ago.
I know, it really is. I mean, I've been on that show 20 years, so I know, God knows how long ago it was, but I remember meeting you.
it's like a distant, it is a distant memory, actually.
Yeah.
The only thing that ever reminds me of it is Mr. Jamie Lang, who lives just over the water. But otherwise, I don't give it. I had a lot of fun on the show, I suppose, doing it, and it was novel at the time, and it was quite exciting. But I don't give it a moment's thought. Haven't seen it in years.
No.
Don't really. It's not. It's not really part of my life.
No.
Basic excuse that there's some drilling going on downstairs. There's not so much I can do about that.
Hopefully
the audio will be usable.
Yeah, no worries. It's absolutely fine. So I'm just fascinated to chat to you then about all of your various endeavours and what an amazing entrepreneur you are. And obviously, I want to talk about the Clean Liquor Company. But just before we get into that, just tell us a little bit about your background and what happened for you. I mean, were you always destined to be an entrepreneur?
I've always had quite an entrepreneurial family. My father's always been an extremely hardworking businessman who's, you know, touched a degree of success, I suppose people would say. My brother's always been very hardworking. I feel like my entrepreneurial streak was perhaps hindered by my alcoholism for throughout my 20s. And I think I got caught up in television perhaps for a little bit too long, looking back at it. I don't really live a life of regret in any way, and I believe that lots of things happen for a reason. But I do feel like some of my 20s were wasted. And I do feel like this kind of heightened version of myself, I could have benefited from that a few years prior. But having said that, having lived on both sides and you know, drank very heavily and had a lot of fun in inverted commas to now, does make for a kind of rounded person, especially when when we have our second child on the way now. We've got a little girl arriving.
Oh, congratulations. How exciting.
In about a month or so, actually.
Wow,
so
brilliant.
And apparently number two can come early. So it could be a couple of weeks or 3 weeks until we have our second child.
Amazing.
Which is obviously very exciting. So I feel, I don't feel like much wool could be pulled over my eyes.
Absolutely.
Which I'm sure could be said for loads of parents. But I certainly have experienced life on both sides, I suppose.
I love that expression, a heightened version of yourself. It's so very true. And I'm so jealous of you for doing it so young, because I had many more wasted years than you did. I mean, you know, in a way, it's brilliant that you got to that stage so early.
I think it's all... everyone has a different path and journey, don't they? But mine couldn't have come sooner. You know, I've always had in the back of my mind an opinion of myself that, you know, we could do great things or have an incredible business or two. Or you know, I've always kind of wanted to be more like my dad and brother, I suppose. But I couldn't ever piece it together or fathom it happening with my relationship with alcohol as it was.
Tell us a bit about that relationship at that time then. What, I mean, I'm guessing, you know, as we always say, you know, alcohol is normalized. It's what everybody does in inverted commas. It's legal. It's very much part of the scene. So I'm guessing it was, it wasn't just you. I'm guessing it was all your mates and everyone around you and the whole showbiz world that you were in at that point. It would have been the done thing.
For me, I think there's just such a common misconception with kind of drinking to excess is fun or cool. Mm. And I think that actually the world's really waking up to it not being cool and getting in the way of kind of productivity and stuff. And I'm not saying that going out for a few beers after work is should be prohibited or whatever. You know, I completely understand the blowing off steam vibe that comes with living in a city or being busy. Mm. I just know that for me, it works so much better without it. And I would urge people who perhaps feel like they could achieve more or have more potential or more to give, or you know, not everyone's madly ambitious, but for those that are, maybe they're being hindered by alcohol as I was, maybe not. So for me, it was completely normal. Every job I had prior to TV even, I was a financial trader in the city. Very normal to drink at lunch, kind of so normal, in fact. And then I moved to ICAP. Again, I was a currency broker for Swiss franc, and you'd be out off the desk from 11 till 1 drinking, and it's just normal.
It would actually be seen as weird if you didn't drink, I'm guessing. I think that's quite difficult for some, you know, young people going into these kind of high powered jobs where the pressure is really on to drink.
Honestly, you wouldn't get the job. If in your interview you said you don't drink.
Surely it's not the same now, though, is it?
I'm not entirely sure.
It'd be awful if it was.
And again, I'm not kind of demonizing the way things are done. You know, I'm just my modest, I just have my modest view of what's best.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, it was so normal. And then you go out with clients all night and you'd be out until the early hours drinking. And then you're in and then you're drinking at lunch the following day. Mm. I think I must have gained 2 stone when I was working in the city, because you just sat at a desk.
Yeah.
Or you're drinking and working. And the two don't really go hand in hand. In order to work really well and kind of make a name for yourself in anything, for me, being drunk didn't help.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it makes you make poor decisions, doesn't it? I think your judgment's hindered. It's almost, you know, you wouldn't be able to run a business, I don't think, if you drank the way I drank. And anyway, I'm not suggesting that anyone had an alcohol issue like I did, or even just drank the way I did. I think it was just very, very social. I'm a very social person. I was always out and about, always at someone's wedding, or always, you know, at someone's birthday, and just drinking was just normal. And also being on TV at the time, people kind of look to you to kind of lead the charge if you're this big character. And I think, you know, if anything, drinking kind of dulled me down and kind of numbed my senses a bit.
Definitely.
And just achieving, if you set yourself massive goals, which I love to do, I've always set myself kind of unachievable goals. It's very difficult to achieve those things if you're in any way hindered by alcohol, for me. For me, it was just grass was greener on the other side. I'd done enough of it for everyone, didn't need to be greedy. And actually it felt like a really welcome positive change. So sure. You know, it was my 2-year soberversary the other day, and somebody
amazing,
congratulations. And it's strange because you feel like you're being congratulated for
not doing something.
For not only you know, is it a personal decision or choice to try and be better. And I think, you know, I'm quite fortunate in that I haven't suffered from, you know, mental health or stress or anxiety. I've always just been quite relaxed as a person. My wife, on the other hand, did suffer from anxiety and still continues to occasionally suffer from anxiety. And it's like she sees a direct correlation between alcohol
Absolutely.
And anxiety.
And that's not talked about enough. It really isn't, even now.
But to me, it's so obvious. And like, I don't mean to say that, you know, you can spot trends, but you know, drinking alcohol and then waking up hungover and extremely unsure of yourself and you know, wondering why your life isn't heading the way, you know, you might want it to, for me is kind of, if you remove alcohol from the equation, you're just going to be clearer on
exactly
on all those points.
I mean, we forget it's a depressant. We forget.
You know? It's so normalized. Exactly. If you came up with an alcoholic product now that an alcohol didn't exist and you pitched it into a retailer, they'd think you were crazy.
Yeah,
you
know, it wouldn't be legalized, would it?
No, not a chance. But anyway, like I've had I don't want to sound like a hypocrite because I've had years of fun drinking, but actually I'm having so much more fun with my life now that I'm not drinking.
Exactly.
You kind of begin to regret the behavior because I don't know, what could I have achieved with those 10 years?
Yeah.
I think actually, if you look at it as a trend, as a global trend, young people are far more interested in spending their money on experiences than intoxicating themselves.
Exactly.
And that is becoming a thing. I think in as early as 10 years from now, drinking full strength spirits in a pub or a bar in public, it won't seem as normal as it does now.
Well, what would be amazing, I think, is if it becomes as normal to choose not to drink alcohol as to drink alcohol. Wouldn't that be great? You know, because at the moment we do still have the sober shamers and just have one. We still have an awful lot of those people around.
Yeah, absolutely. But I do believe that the sober among us, I think people who are newly sober, who kind of miss drinking and feel like it's having a negative effect on their social life, haven't quite perhaps yet realized the benefit of sobriety.
Exactly, and exactly.
If somebody were to sober shame me, it's so easy to realize that you're right.
Exactly. You
know, it's not a question for me. It's not like, oh, but don't you wish you could be having a glass of champagne? It's But just in passing, I could have a glass.
You could
champagne.
If you want. Yeah, of course
nobody's
you could.
Nobody's stopping me having a glass of champagne.
Exactly. You know but why I mean? Would so you want to?
I just don't. For me, there's no real point.
Yeah, exactly.
Very bad for you. It dehydrates you. The chance of me making sensible decisions as a CEO of a business the following day are impaired. You know, and it doesn't. I think also for me, having kids growing up, it's all part of the same journey for me. I always looked at sober people, even when I was drinking heavily, I always looked at sober people with respect, always. Because a lot of people who had aspects of a life that I wanted were usually sober. And it's weird.
That's it happens really interesting.
To me time and time again.
So even these kind of role models almost who weren't drinking, that's really interesting.
I would meet someone and I would say, God, that guy's or that woman is so amazing. And it would transpire that they were sober.
Right.
And at the time, I would always log that. And I would always say, how interesting that I've taken affection to this person.
Yeah.
Not because they're sober. I didn't know at the time. And then you find out later. And then you can't help but wonder, is the reason that his business is going so well because he's sober? Or why? And in a purely material sense, which I believe does play a role in your life when you're a bit younger, it's like, how does he drive that car? How does he have that watch? Like, why is his girlfriend so good looking? Or whatever. And you're kind of like, maybe it's because he's sober. Like, maybe.
Which actually is the opposite of the conventional thinking, which is that, you know, drinking is glamorous and the champagne you mentioned is the glamorous way to get the girl or the guy. You know, it's so lit. The marketing around alcohol is just so clever. This brainwashing to make us think that you can't possibly be attractive to the opposite sex or whatever or to be successful unless you've got alcohol. I mean, hopefully that's changing too.
Yeah. And by the way, look, it's fully worth mentioning that I know an awful lot of extremely successful, happy people who do drink.
exactly. You know, there's always an alternative for everything. Yeah.
This isn't a black and white situation.
No, but I agree.
Just think that people deserve choices. I think if you're a woman in a bar, particularly, and you order a non-alcoholic drink, everyone assumes you're pregnant.
Yeah, you know? Totally.
Or you're either pregnant or you're an alcoholic.
Yeah,
and that's kind of unacceptable. There's a big negative connotation surrounding not drinking, and it should definitely be the other way around. And all of the products have these connotations because they have the word "no" in them. Non-alcoholic beer, non-alcoholic cocktail. It's kind of like going into a bar and ordering something that's not fun.
Can you just share with us how you switched from being a really heavy drinker to someone who doesn't drink? You know, what was that path like for you? What were the difficult bits? How did you do it?
There were a number of occasions in a short space of time where I felt embarrassed or humiliated by my alcohol consumption. I've always been a good drunk, if there is such a thing. I've always yeah. been happy. I've always been, you know, non-aggressive, non-violent, obviously, you know, never even mouthy. You know, I've always just been the life and soul type situation. So it's taken a while to understand that you even have a drinking problem, because most people who are cornered with, you know, right, listen, you need to stop drinking, have elements of their drinking that are very unattractive. You know, they lose control. They wake up outside and don't know how they got home, or all the stuff that actually I never experienced. But it got to the point where I was beginning to really feel like an irresponsible adult. And we were, Vogue and I were married at the time, and we had Theodore on the way. And I just began to question what kind of father I might be, you know, if I was just happy to drink during the day or blame other people for my shortcomings. And you know, I wouldn't necessarily ever take responsibility for my drinking. You know, if I was in between TV shows and I had a month of no work, that would be a month of partying. And then just like, actually, it's impossible to build a business, a legacy, a name for yourself, whatever you're looking to do with your life, if you think that way. And if when you're given time off, you just take time off, you know. So I guess my mind just wasn't working properly. And also Vogue pulled me up on it a couple of times. She was always extremely cool and really gracious with it. But she just said, you know, I really hope that you're not going to just be drinking all the time when our son arrived. And I guess at that point, I just thought, you know what, I've always loved sober people. I've always had respect for sober people. Maybe now is the time just to knock it on the head. And I made, and I think the last night I drank, I drank heavily. I was on whiskey, drank close to a bottle of whiskey, I think. And I remember going to bed feeling really, you know, lightheaded. And I kind of lay down and I was just kind of conking out in bed. And I just thought, this is like incredibly unhealthy and unproductive and just and a bit boring. You know, there's really no need for it. I've never felt that I needed the alcohol or that I was dependent on the alcohol, but boredom led me to
it's a habit, isn't it?
Terrible habits of, you know, you come home and right, what do we do? Open a bottle of wine. Same way that I smoked cigarettes for a bit, and it's kind of like, right, I've just got home from work. Cigarette, you know, and it's like I just started making all these, questioning all these behaviors that I'd become ingrained in my life.
What was it for you then when you'd kind of made that decision? Did you find it easy? Did you literally just stop and make that decision?
Or was it really obvious? It was really obvious to me the morning after that I was going to take at least a really big break.
Right.
And I might reiterate that I'm not, you know, all this language surrounding it.
I know the language is very annoying. I know it is.
I don't really know what any of that means. I know that I'm not teetotal. I cook with wine when I make sauces. If my mouthwash has some alcohol in it, I don't know.
But you don't overdrink is what you don't do.
I don't drink in the traditional sense to get drunk or even feel a buzz. Our products have 1.2% alcohol in them. If you mix it with tonic, you're looking at about 0.3% drink. So, you know, there's some alcohol in there. There's 2% in a ripe banana. There's 1.8% in soy sauce. There's 2% in bread. You know, obviously they're not labeled as alcoholic products because they're not alcoholic products, but you know, there is alcohol kicking around in a lot of day-to-day stuff that, you know, can't get you drunk. You can't eat enough bananas to get you drunk, in the same way that you can't really drink enough clean gin to get you drunk. So for me, it's fine. And to be honest, you know, someone online called me not a real alcoholic the other day.
What? I said,
well, great. I don't really.
Well, that would be something to aspire to.
Well, fantastic. I'm delighted that I'm not a real alcoholic. Yeah. You know, I'm only referring to myself as an alcoholic to drive points home to people.
Yeah, of course.
It's okay to say that you drink too much. I think the word alcoholic, just in passing, is disgusting. I think
I hate it. I never really use the word at all.
I only use it when I'm trying to make a specific point about change, you know, but I would never call anybody else an alcoholic. I think it's a really disgusting way of being labeled, actually.
Totally.
And it's kind of, I know some people, I won't name them, who are so successful and so happy and brilliant fathers who drink wine every day. So on paper, they are savage alcoholics. And it's like, you can't call that man an alcoholic.
I think it really depends so much whether you have an off switch, you know, doesn't it? And some people do have an off switch and they can drink and they can turn it off. But I didn't have an off switch. It would never be one for me. And there's so many people like that. But when you, I'm just really keen to know, was it difficult for you? Or did you catch it, in inverted commas, early enough that actually it was relatively effortless once you'd made the decision?
I think there's people who try and give up alcohol that don't necessarily have a real issue with it, and that they become almost straight away. You do a month and you go, what's the point?
Easy.
You know, I may as well. So for me, I think I understood that the problem was such that it had to stop. So for me, when I make my mind up on something, if I decide, right, you know, we're going to be the best clean company in the world, you know, that's now my driving force. And at the time, my driving force was just to not drink alcohol. So I turned alcohol into the enemy. I was very sanctimonious at times. I would walk past the bar and be like, God, look at these morons, you know, whereas actually that was me a week ago, you know, so that's all hypocritical and incredibly unfair, but it helped me to put myself above it. Which I think,
I mean, do you think you kind of used your entrepreneurial drive, if you like, to just decide that's something you were going to do and that's it?
I think so, yeah. But also, you know, if I'm honest, you know, when I'm 50 years old and I've achieved all the things that I want to achieve, will I enjoy a nice glass of red wine somewhere with my family? I really don't know. What I do know is that the way in which I was drinking and the habit that I had formed had to stop. You know, whether or not you'll catch me in a few years' time having a light beer at a picnic, I really don't know. I'm not here to say alcohol is the enemy. I don't see the point in drinking in that way. But I did for a very long time. So, you know, I hope people don't think I'm being hypocritical. But for me, it was a very necessary change. And I've always wanted to be extremely successful. I've always been driven by success, if I'm honest. I realize that's not a very attractive thing to say, but I see things quite clearly now, and I kind of have blinders on. Things that used to bother me don't bother me, and I have I have aims and goals that I have to achieve, and kind of absolutely nothing is going to get in the way of that for me now. And we have a clear vision and a clear future, and I suppose I'm just really busy with that. It's very kind of you to say that I'm a good entrepreneur. I think this particular business is going, you know, I, like everyone, have had false starts, failed attempts at all sorts of stuff, creating really good, you know, highly valued businesses is really not easy. But I believe that this time around, I'm really helped by the authenticity of what we're doing and what it really means to me. And it's not for everyone. You know, I realize that a lot of people say alcohol-free gin, like, what a joke. What's the point? Have a Coca-Cola. But some people don't want a Coca-Cola. Some people
no, absolutely.
Have,
yeah. I mean, I think, as you know, the movement is changing. You know, it's massive, isn't it? Now, a couple of years ago, certainly 3 or 4 years ago, it was if you tried any alcohol-free products, they were pretty naff. You could maybe get a beer if you were lucky, but there was nothing else. Yeah. But now, as you know, the market has expanded so much,
and it's growing so rapidly.
It really is incredible. And what's amazing about, you know, products like yours is that they, you know, they look great. You know, the packaging is fantastic, and it stands alongside, you know, the your regular bottles. So that glamour that we were talking about, you know, which we can't deny that you know, alcohol just, it has a glamour attached to it, which I bloody hate, but it is the way it is. Yeah. But you've brought that glamour in. We can have that glamour again. So, you know, I think the rise in the alcohol-free drinks market is unbelievable. Obviously, I'm really interested in how you came to decide what drinks to make then. So what was the process? Did you hook up with a brewing company and you know, what was the thinking? How come you didn't do a beer or whatever?
We are going to cover many aspects of just alcohol in general. We started with the gin because that's where the majority of the competition is, and us Brits are huge gin drinkers.
That's true, particularly in recent years.
We're looking at Germany, Spain, Australia, France, the Netherlands, and America for launches end of this year. And we won't necessarily launch with clean gin in some of those territories.
Right,
in
because America, that's not the thing they drink as much.
I've never, of course I want to be the leading brand in this country. Obviously this is home, but you know, the way I see that's almost a given for me. And I know that's really arrogant, sorry, but there's a fine line between kind of arrogance and confidence. And I just, we're so driven, I just want to take that and move on. We're going to grow to be a global brand, and that will mean that we lead with different spirits. So here, gin is a major thing. Our gin at present really outperforms our rum. The rum, in my opinion, is an incredible product. I drink the rum more than I drink the gin. In the States, rum outperforms gin, so we will launch with the rum if we haven't got a bourbon in time for a launch over there. Australia may be a more beer-driven market. Spain is a more beer-driven market, although the Nolo spirit category is growing faster in Spain than anywhere else. The beer market is made up, 25% of the beer market in Spain is made up by alcohol-free beer. Which is
that
like
right? Wow.
One in four beers consumed in the whole of Spain is alcohol-free.
That's amazing.
It's amazing for the category. And we're looking to expand and create, you know, if we launched in Mexico, we'd launch with a clean tequila, you know. We have to kind of play ball with what's popular.
Sure.
And of course, all of the products that we create will be available here in the UK, but here our gin sales to our rum sales are, you know, gin's a much bigger beast. Also, a lot of brands that are out there doing what we do or trying to do what we do play in the gin category for whatever reason. So I figured that if we're going to steal market share and own the category, we need to compete in what everyone else is doing to be the best. You know, necessarily being first to market is the best. If we launched, you know, the first alcohol-free whiskey here in the UK, I think we would find that most of our competition would still sell more of their alcohol-free gin, because the market's bigger. So
yeah, no, that makes sense. I must ask you about this, the ABV thing, which I think most people, you know, it's very, very difficult to understand. And as you quite rightly point out, you know, there's alcohol in bananas, as it were, and it's not going to get you drunk. It's not going to be a limit time in any bananas you can have. But I'm interested in why you ended up with your, it's 1.2, I think, isn't it? The alcohol, which, as you say, by the time you've had a tonic, etc. But why did you go for that when, as you're aware, most of the products on the market are 0.5, or they're at the other end of the, I think they still call it low alcohol, and they have like 8%, don't they? A lot of drinks. What was the thinking behind that?
Alcohol tax kicks in above anything 1.2. So for me initially, so I was quite keen for it to be a proposition that's great for bars. We were targeting the moderation market more than the total abstinence market. If this is the total abstinence market in the UK, this is the moderation market. So in order, there's an education piece that comes with all this stuff. And in order to get people from buying gin to 0.0 Seedlip, for example,
it's quite a big leap.
It helps that our product has some gin in it. Our product is made by creating actually quite a potent gin distillate. It's about 80%, 80. And then we create a kind of juniper-infused water, juniper distillate as such. And then we blend the two until it's exactly 1.2. So far more of the botanical distillate than there is gin. But there is really strong gin in our clean gin, which ultimately leaves you with a 1.2% product, which when mixed gives you 0.3, which in Europe is alcohol free.
Yeah.
So anywhere in Europe, I can sell a clean gin and tonic as an alcohol free drink. Here in the UK, it doesn't quite work like that. We're low alcohol. But again, it comes back to the language thing. For me, it's what it does to me or my body or whoever's drinking it. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, there's absolutely no alcohol in this product, you know, so for people who are saying, but it still has 1.2%, or like, is that five times weaker than beer? It's like, it's actually a lot less than that, you know, unless you're going to drink the clean gin straight. And very few people would drink gin straight.
It's,
you know, a 0.3 to 0.5 drink every time you have a clean gin and tonic. It is complicated and it's kind of unnecessary. You need 31 clean gin and tonics essentially to have one gin and tonic.
Right.
I think you can agree that...
I hope you're not going to do that.
Most people who are cutting back on alcohol or who don't drink at all, as I like to say, I don't drink at all. If I was at a party and I had 31 clean gin and tonics, that's, you know, it's more than two bottles of gin. So, you know, you're drinking for the sake of drinking then. And even then I've had a shot of gin, which wouldn't get me drunk or anywhere near drunk. So I deem it, a great product for me. Also the 1.2% really helps us with the flavor profile. We believe that, and Trustpilot believes that our clean gin tastes more like gin, a gin and tonic, than anyone else on the market. That may be because we have 1.2% of alcohol in the product. Obviously, it's easier to taste like alcohol when you have some alcohol in the product. But for example, for the US, in order to bypass the three-tier distribution system and not have to have, you know, eight sets of hands in the pot, we have to be 0.4.
Right.
So below 0.5. So there, all our products will be 0.4. Here, they're 1.2.
Interesting.
You can play with the level of potency, or in this case, impotency for the alcohol, quite easily by adding more distillate. An example in the Middle East, we'll have to launch a 0.0 because in the Middle East, if you were served your lamb with a red wine jus, that would be completely unacceptable.
There's
no alcohol, you know, in certain parts of Saudi Arabia or Saudi Arabia in general. So it has to be made in a separate distillery where alcohol has never existed. You know, there's all sorts of rules.
I bet you've learned so much over the last few years about all of this.
But it's great fun and I love learning. And not only just about the alcohol or non-alcoholic world, I've learned loads about just business in general. I've purposefully surrounded myself with super smart, intelligent people who worked at really great companies before, and you know, we paid them to jump ship to come and work with us to give ourselves the best chance of being number one. You know, you can't do it on your own. I've always thought, especially back when I used to drink, I could do anything on my own. And you can't. The fact is, you can't. You know, like you need good advice. You need sound professional advice and experience. You know, and our team is really diverse. We have guys from Innocent. We have guys from Mars. We have guys from Britvic. You know, we have a guy from Diageo. You know, so we are already eliminating chances of failure just because the team is amazing. And I'm the odd one out. I'm the one who drives the vision and I'm the one who drives the dream and you know, steers the ship as such. But without them, I may as well pack up and go home.
Give us an idea of a nice drink we can mix up then with, give us a little recipe if you've got one off the top of your head.
Sure. I've got two rum ones and I'll give you a couple of gin ones afterwards. So my favorite drink without question is a mojito. I love a mojito. So you can make a delicious mojito with clean rum. All you need is some fresh mint, some lime. Some people use lemon. I prefer it with lime. Clean rum, 1.2% ABV, but once mixed, it'll be alcohol-free in Europe. and then you want some sugar cane sugar, or a spoonful of kind of brown sugar granules, soda water and crushed ice. There's a lot of different, there are some real mojito snobs out there, by the way. I put up this recipe for mojito and everyone said, you don't do that. You don't touch that. And I said, actually, I was a barman for a year and a bit and that is exactly how I would make it. But, I like to, and people, I put the mint, lime and sugar in all at once. I like to muddle it. Some people don't. I then put the crushed ice and then the rum and then the soda water and give it all a nice mix. That's delicious. You can have a delicious, on a lovely hot day like today, we do a piña colada, which is clean rum, fresh pineapple chunks, the juice of one lime and coconut milk with ice, just directly into the blender.
Oh, that sounds delicious. Really good.
It's very nice.
Amazing.
And then actually the gin drinks, my favorites are just the straight up kind of gin and tonics. Mm-hmm. I love the normal clean gin. We have clean gin rhubarb, raspberry, elderflower now as well.
Wow, do you? Yeah. Interesting.
By the way, I'll send you the full collection. Amazing. if you'd be so kind as to drop Dean your home address.
Absolutely. When you mention these mixes, then would you just use like one shot, like the equivalent of a shot?
Yeah, shot. We suggest the 50 mil shot, so right. A double shot.
Okay. Yeah.
We suggest that because obviously, if you are looking for that kind of alcoholic likeness to a real gin and tonic, obviously, you know, having such a negligible amount of alcohol, it's not gonna burn your throat and it's not going to give you that kind of full on alcoholic kick. But it will certainly trick you into thinking, wow, bloody hell, this tastes just like a gin
fabulous
and tonic
drink.
Which is the really fun part of it. We do suggest just, you know, the more gin the better, really, but 50 mils, otherwise you're going to run out of your bottle very soon.
and then so for the future, I mean, I'm guessing you would love to see this in bars and clubs and restaurants, and you want it everywhere.
We're in a handful of hotels and bars and stuff, obviously. With coronavirus, we had to put our on-trade distribution plans to rest just for now, because most pubs are shut. We're always going to be more of a off-trade business anyway. Most brands, alcohol brands and non-alcoholic brands, really focus on getting distribution into pubs and bars and then go to big retailers, and I've always seen it the other way around. We aim to be the number low spirit of choice in every household. For that, we need to be on shelves everywhere, you know. And I think we have a unique ability to market through social media and the press. Because I've made so much shit TV.
Must be good for something, eh?
I always knew there was a reason for doing it. So that's finally paying off. We have the attention of the press. So we get to speak directly to the consumer, which of course to me is very important.
Brilliant.
And that's about it, really.
Yeah,
we look
love
forward
it.
To hopefully conquering the world.
Amazing. So I'm guessing, we could talk for literally half an hour about all the different benefits that you've experienced from ditching the booze or stopping drinking as much. If there was one thing, what would you say it is?
I think there's no negatives to it at all.
No, exactly.
There's only a long list.
That's a trick answer.
I'll try to not bore people, but it's obviously very beneficial for your health. Alcohol, you know, could be considered very fun, but it's very bad for you. I'm far more creative. My work drives through the roof. I understand things that I would have found very complicated before really easily now. Things that I wouldn't have taken the time to do, I just get done really quickly. I'm physically more fit. I'm slimmer. I'm faster. I'm stronger. My skin's better.
And a very present parent.
I feel as though like the window for making mistakes like doesn't really exist. I'm not trying to in any way claim that I'm perfect, but life when you drink and are constantly trying to cover up for yourself or constantly making bad decisions just vanishes, right? I wake up, I work out, I'm at work, I do my work, I come home, I tend to my kid, I love my wife, we're best friends. You know, there's no real opportunity in my life to trip up, and I have the most wonderful life. Like, I wouldn't change a single thing about my marriage, my kids, you know. Like, I'm just a really happy person.
That's amazing, isn't it?
And I was always kind of happy when I drank, if I'm completely honest. Like, I was never in the deep pits of depression, but like, or whatever, but I just like, I never, like, things just fit now.
I love that.
Everything
just
fits. I have a routine and a regime, and you stick to both. And I genuinely believe that we can build the clean liquor company. And so, you know, there were articles flying around the US recently saying that the next Beyond Meat, which IPO'd for $16 billion, is going to be a no and low liquor brands, because like it's just going to go crazy.
Mm.
I've always believed that we're going to be worth over $1 billion from day one, but now I'm, you know, there's no limit to what I feel like we can achieve, and we're growing. Like we just did a 200k pounds, like, and that's just growing. So I really feel like, you know, we're going to erupt into this already exciting space.
Yeah.
And nothing can be more exciting than that for me.
Amazing.
So, well, I find that I've always had a deep desire to be, well, I suppose not only taken seriously, but to actually be busy and actually be doing something of real value. I never valued my TV career ever. I've always thought that making television was, like, to me a bit of fun, something on the side maybe. I never saw it as like, you know, I'm really proud of what I'm doing here. I always kind of wanted to get out and do something, you know, of substance with my life, where the attention wasn't all on me. I can't bear having to be liked by people and, you know, having to be heard. It's just like, it's so what? Get on with it. You know, just do something. You know, and it was fun for a time, and I was young when I did it. But, you know, this for me, I feel really fulfilled and complete doing this.
Yeah,
and I love it. I wake up every day feeling well and feeling like what I'm going to do is going to make a difference. And it's awesome. And I love it.
Brilliant. Spencer, I really appreciate your time. It's so lovely of you to chat with us. It's brilliant. So just give us the website then for anyone to have a look.
Cleanliquor.com. www.cleanliquor.com. So LIQUOR, cleanliquor.com. And we're at cleanliquor on Instagram and Facebook.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
So you'll find the link in the show notes, and we'll give you that little recipe as well for the virgin mojito there, which is super nice. My son's been making it. It's really, really good. And I look forward to seeing you same time next week. As I mentioned, if you are booked on to our retreat day or our afternoon, Saturday, 11th of June, do get in touch. It's going to be amazing to be able to meet some people in person. Definitely going to be planning more events and more stuff as and when. If that's something you're interested in, do drop me a line, do send me a message, please get in touch. Obviously, if you are interested in the Sober Club, you know where we are. I've decided that we're going to be open, the doors are going to be open for a little bit longer. So do come on down. The reason I say that is because I've got a bit of renovation work to do within the Sober Club. So putting in some fabulous new features, and I was going to kind of close the doors for a while, but at the moment it's open. So do come and join us. Just a reminder that we have people in the Sober Club who are on day one and literally just starting out, and we've got members who are 5 and 6 years sober, because it's about so much more than just ditching the booze. It's really about living your best life, optimum health and well-being. We've got some fantastic features, you know, just covering all kinds of aspects of a great life. And I've got some great guests coming up on the podcast too, including Susie Pearl, who is a fascinating woman, amazing, really, really great author with a fascinating background. And she's written a great book on the art of creativity. And I think this is just something that is so relevant for people who have ditched the booze. So, so relevant. So really looking forward to bringing you that interview. Also, I've done an interview with a leading nutritionist, Heather Nickell, from the States. And again, some real gems in there that I'm looking forward to sharing with you, because as you'll be well aware, one of the first things that kind of goes wrong, in inverted commas, is when people ditch the booze, is that they just get the munchies for the sugar and then find they're not eating well and the weight doesn't regulate, and it all just becomes, you know, sometimes a bit of a battle with food. You know, you kind of feel, oh my goodness, I've done this really hard thing, and managed to get the booze out of my life, and now I'm having a fight with food. I mean, not a food fight, you know what I mean. And she gives us some really fantastic tips, because eating really, really well in the first few weeks, if you're at that stage, it's absolutely critical. So yeah, please stay tuned for those. And usually when I have guests like that, they record a little exclusive bit for us in the Sober Club as well. So we've got some real gems in there if you're interested in joining us. Bear in mind, you can go back and listen to the podcasts. There's a whole massive archive of them at thesoberclub.com. Just click the drop down menu. And you can vote for me. That's what I was going to ask you. I think there's still time. I think there is. Yeah, I think there is still a week to vote for the podcast in the British Podcast Awards. You have to go to britishpodcastawards.com/vote, and it pops up with a little box where you click vote, and then it will say search for podcast, and you need to type alcohol-free life into that box, and hopefully the podcast will pop up, and then you just click it. And then the important bit is that they have to send you an email to verify that you voted. Now, a couple of Sober Club members said to me, oh, I tried to vote for you, but I didn't get the verification email, and then it found it in my spam. So just a heads up that if you are going to be kind enough to vote for me in the listener's choice in the British Podcast Awards, then do wait for the email that they send you, and you just click on that and send it back, and then the vote is confirmed. I would hugely appreciate it. It really means a lot when I get the feedback from the podcast and people take the time to leave me a review. I can't tell you how lovely it is, because this is a labour of love, and it really makes a difference to me if I know that that you're enjoying what I do. And by the way, the podcast is going to be 18 months old next month. How amazing is that? 18 months old, still like a kind of toddler, but there's a lot of episodes there. I think we're on 80 now. So we'll definitely have to do something celebratory for the 18-month episode, which I think is in July. I'll jack up some great guests and maybe some competitions and some stuff to give away. We'll definitely do some of that. There already are some competitions. If you have a look at soberclub.com, there's a competition to win some unlimited beer. That's the new beer. And I'm going to be interviewing Johnny from that company. And there's a few other bits and pieces to win as well. So I look forward to seeing you same time next week. You know where I am if you want to get in touch, at Jenny Lee Grace on social media, or you can just contact me through the Sober Club. If you're struggling, reach out for help. Don't do this alone. And if you have managed to stay sober in lockdown, what a legacy. Pat yourself on the back. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.